and you are listening to the Texas Standard. College has become a prerequisite for most high-paying jobs in the U.S., but college itself has gotten out of reach for millions, and the numbers are growing. The New York Fed says in the past 10 years, student loan debt has grown by more than 100%, which means what in hard numbers? Well, just consider this. People aged 19 to 29 hold more than $1 trillion in student debt, and that's just the millennial generation we're talking about. Adam Harris has been writing about this subject in The Atlantic, and he says there's little doubt the college affordability crisis is going to be a big factor in our upcoming political season. Adam, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's put this in perspective first, because there are millions who are already deep in debt, and then you have young people who can't go to college or even really consider it because they can't pay for it. Those are similar but different issues, and I'm wondering what crisis are politicians really going to try to address as you see it?
Well, right now, it seems that they're kind of doing the forward-looking crisis, right, where you have a range of Democratic candidates who are proposing free college policies, whether that's tuition-free college policies or debt-free college policies. And essentially what those will do would do is protect the next generation from kind of suffering under this debt that we've already seen millions sucked into.
This is an issue that you've been writing about for some time, and I seem to recall in one of your earlier stories, you had a map of the United States, and something like 20 states already had something going on that was described loosely as free college. Are we actually making any progress along these lines or no?
Yeah. So there, prior to the 2016 election, there was kind of a building national movement around free college policies. And then after the 2016 election, where you have the election of Donald Trump, who's kind of one of his advisors famously said that he wouldn't support free college policies. You saw that momentum shift to the states, which had kind of already been kind of these incubators for free college policies. So there are about 20 or so states right now that have free college or college promise plans that tend to cover community college. So typically you'll have tuition-free community college. And one of the highlights of those is Tennessee's plan, which covers not only recent high school graduates, but also adult students who would be returning to school.
Well, let's talk about how this translates as we look at political season 2020, right? You have a lot of Democratic candidates, and already you report that some of them are wading into this issue, right?
Yes. So you have Bernie Sanders, who is kind of famously in the 2016 election, kind of famously pushed Hillary Clinton to the left on this issue. You have Kamala Harris, who is now pushing debt-free college policies. You have Elizabeth Warren and Cory Booker, and kind of this range of candidates who are supporting free college policies in one shape or form. Now, I should mention that free college is kind of a catch-all for these plans where you have tuition and debt-free. Typically, advocates suggest that debt-free college policies are kind of the more progressive of the policies.
So what's the difference between debt-free and, say, free college as we might commonly think of it?
So typically when we're thinking of the state free college programs, we're thinking of tuition-free programs, right? And those are programs where tuition is covered, but you're not covering those other things like books and housing and
right.
food. A debt-free college plans to kind of address all of those issues. So not only are you covering the student's tuition, but you're also factoring in the fact that they're going to have to pay, you know, a couple hundred dollars for their books, and they're going to have to find a place to live, and they're going to have to eat.
Is there anyone that stands out, maybe any candidate's suggestion here that stands out as perhaps more doable than others?
So there is a proposal that several of the candidates have signed on to in the Senate, and that comes from Brian Schatz, which would basically have it be a one-to-one federal match on any state spending on free college programs. So if the state of Tennessee is putting $100 million towards free college, the federal government would match that and say, you guys get $100 million towards free college. Mm-hmm. And that could basically help the state's money go a little bit further so that they could do a little bit more with their free college plans.
Now, just to be clear, Brian Schatz is from Hawaii, and he's a Democrat, and the Senate is Republican. Not have any wheels or any traction?
It's gotten some traction, but of course, it's primarily among Democrats. It's yet to be seen whether the House will take up similar legislation. But one of the things that free college, of course, rests on is not only the Democrats winning the presidency, but potentially also winning the Senate to make sure that it's kind of an easier track to having this policy go into effect.
You just said it kind of counts on the Democrats winning in 2020. Why? I mean, on the one hand, we used to talk about this as a matter for low-income Americans. Mm-hmm. This is increasingly a matter not just for low, but for middle and even for some higher income Americans who are being squeezed by the price of higher ed these days. So I wonder, is there really that much resistance on the Republican side, or does this not become a more bipartisan issue?
So I think this really kind of rests in the idea of federalism and the general philosophy of Republicans' view on education should be a state and local issue, and trying not to have as much red tape at the federal level. At the state level, even a red state like Tennessee, which has, you know, probably the most lauded free college plan, the reason why they're able to do that is because it is a state issue and they're making an economic argument for the state. Nationally, that argument becomes a little bit more difficult, especially if you are under the kind of thought that the states should be in control of what goes on with education.
Adam Harris writes about education for The Atlantic. Adam, thanks again.
Thanks so much for having me.